S-R-A-N.
It's just a bit awkward.
All right, we're ready whenever you are.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The rule in Theracense is clear, that a presumption is inappropriate when the success of a product can be attributed to more than one patent. The board below granted SRAM the presumption, despite the undisputed fact there are at least three more patents that cover different features that are all directed to the same solution the 027 patent solves. And the board, in fact, in another IPR, not only allowed SRAM to argue, but gave SRAM the presumption that a different patent, the 250 patent, which SRAM calls enabling technology, credit for the very same secondary considerations that the board attributed to the 027 patent.
I have a little housekeeping question for you.
Yes.
On page 43 of the red brief, SRAM states that Fox falsely suggests that five of the eight licenses were not to the 027 patent, even though the board expressly found that each of those five licenses include the 027 patent within their scope. And indeed, you certainly do seem to suggest that they were not to the 027 patent in the blue brief. So I want to give you a chance to tell me why they're wrong, if they are.
Well, they're wrong in what we suggested. All we said in our blue brief, and remember, the point with licensing is, did anybody sit down at the licensing table with SRAM out of a desire to license the 027 patent? And what the licenses show, all the licenses, is that when people sat down with SRAM for a license, what they wanted was access to the what SRAM calls all of the X-Sync technology, which includes the enabling technology patent of the 250 patent. But it also includes, I think there were eight or nine at least, other patents covering this technology. And the point was that those patents, those five licenses, don't even mention the 027 patent. So that's an indication that nobody really cared about the 027 patent in particular. There's nothing special about it because nobody mentioned it. It's not even mentioned in the license. And in the three other licenses where it is mentioned, it's mentioned as one of a suite of other patents, again, with nothing special calling out the 027 patent. So we addressed this in our gray brief. We never suggested that those licenses do not cover the 027 patent. They just lump it in with all the other patents that are licensed. So the board... Yes.
I guess what I struggle with is when you have an invention or a product like this that has what seems like a bunch of different features that have commercial appeal and is popular. If you disagree, that's fine, but just go with me on this. How do you get a nexus and still be able to enforce your patent rights when you split them up into different patents? Because, right. Or at least get a presumption of commercial success. So I get your argument, you know, it has feature A that people love, which is covered by one patent, feature B that people love that's covered by another patent. And if they're only trying to enforce, or we're only talking about patent A, well, they can't show necessarily that they get the presumption because of that. It may be because of the yeah. grouping of features. Does that mean that they then have to write a patent that covers all of the features that are possibly
successful?
Not necessarily, right? I mean, they can prove that more than one patent's responsible for all these things. And I think this is an important point.
But how do they get the presumption?
They're not entitled. A presumption of nexus is not one of the rights that comes bundled with the patent when it's given, right? And so the way they prosecuted the application will have some influence over whether that's
if they had an application for this, for what ultimately turned out to be the commercial product, and they put in all the different features, assuming they were allowed to by the patent office, I don't, you know the niceties of how much different stuff you can have in one application.
Right.
If they could show that this is every single element that's successful here is covered by this, then maybe they get the presumption.
So they get around the Theracense problem. Now, they still have the other problem where one of their witnesses says, you know, these chain retaining features are just
But I'm just trying to talk about hypotheticals about how we do this with multi-feature products when the features are covered by different patents.
Right.
And if they lump them all into one patent, presuming the examiner even allows that, then if it has too many features, then that seems like easy to design around, too.
Right.
And so then they could enforce it in terms of...
And of course, there's the incentive for the patent owner to not put a Christmas tree claim where you just start putting things into claims, things like that, right? So there's a balance here that's in control. The patentee has control over it. But there are a couple important things about the presumption here, which is it's... I said earlier, it's not an entitlement. The patentee has the burden in every case to prove a nexus. Now, there are some cases that give a shortcut, right? But the shortcut...
I mean, the other answer, too, is even if they don't get the presumption, they can put forth direct evidence linking this
feature exactly what
to
they
the
need. That's exactly
success.
Where I was going, right? Because they have the burden of proof. They don't get the presumption.
Right.
We're
so
not saying game over.
DeMarco uses the word coextensive. If there's more than bells and whistles, it's your view... They can get nexus for commercial success. The only thing we're disputing here is whether they get a presumption.
Right.
So if there are two patents or two different things that drove commercial success, what would they do? No presumption, but they can come in and they can show, we've had this feature, here's the marketing, these two features have resulted in an increase of $50 billion profit.
Right.
We should get 25% or 50% of that as a commercial success prong.
Right. That's exactly
that
right. And this is another one of the points they try to make in their red brief. They raise a straw man, which is we're saying you can never prove a presumption in that case. We're not saying that. We're saying you have to prove it in that case with evidence. You have to put evidence in front. What their position is that if you
and
have
continued... And there's no dispute, right, that the burden is on the patent owner
there's
for
no
commercial success
that...
or for other secondary considerations. So the only thing in dispute is whether or not they get to leap over what is normally the burden on a person.
Exactly.
Right?
Are they entitled to use the shortcut that the law provides when you have... And remember, the reason you have the presumption in the first place is presumably... If you have a product on the market and it's got a new novel feature that all the competitors don't, and that's the difference, that the success of that product is probably due to that difference. But as soon as you start adding new inventions into it, you can no longer make that presumption.
So in the absence of a presumption, they establish nexus, which doesn't seem that crazy because presumably it's their product, their marketing. They have immediate access to all of the information in order to establish if there is a nexus that there was. So what's your, under your theory, what do you do on rebuttal?
So on rebuttal, what we have to do is come forward. So let's put aside the question of presumption. Let's assume the presumption was given. Correct.
Or no presumption. No, I'm assuming
there's no presumption.
So they have to prove nexus.
Right.
They show whatever, and then you get to respond.
And then we can come in and cross-examine their evidence and put in our own evidence. For example, well, the best evidence is Schramm's own documents from the 250 IPR, where they call the 250 patent enabling technology that is responsible for every single sale they were given credit for in this case, every single bit of praise they were given for in this case. So that's Exhibit 1, which ought to destroy the nexus in this case because we already have a finding from another IPR that a different patent is responsible for those things.
Well, in theory, can't more than one thing be responsible?
Yeah, but you can't give a presumption that more than one are responsible, right? So
that was the hypothetical.
Without a presumption, yeah, but there's
oh,
no
so so if there's okay, if there's a okay, let's assume they come in with proof that both patents are.
They come in, we say you have the burden, no presumption, and they come in and they
okay,
put
and they
on
put
evidence.
In their
so
evidence.
You have
okay.
that you then have to come in and rebut.
All right,
you know,
so we come in with the evidence that we have already in the record, which is Schramm's own marketing materials show that nobody at Schramm thought the 027 patent was special. Nothing in their marketing material says
okay.
anything about an offset.
And then they just decide, and then the board gets to decide.
Yeah, with them having the burden of proof, right? But what the board did was they switched the burden of proof on us because this inappropriate presumption.
So you're not asking for what you're seeking is a remand that tell them they kind of misapplied this law, whatever law we have a presumption, right?
At a minimum.
How do we, I mean, this is a very... There's a lot of facts here. This is a very long and detailed opinion with regard to the details of secondary considerations. How can we possibly put ourselves in the role of a fact finder in the first instance to determine in the absence of a presumption
I mean,
how
did,
these things
did they out? Rely only on the presumption or did in the alternative they present direct evidence?
They did not present any direct evidence. When you look at the board's decision...
What are we looking at in the record? I mean, there's a lot.
Well, in the record, you can look at the marketing materials that...
what I'm saying is there's a lot of evidence in the record related
there is.
Directly to...
What you can ask my friend when he's up is... What in the record shows anybody at Schramm cared about the 027 patent? Show me a marketing.
I guess my question wasn't specifically about the evidence, but how they actually characterized their case below and whether they did it both as a presumption or if we don't presumption in the alternative, here's direct evidence.
Yeah. They relied on the presumption and then...
And the board didn't make alternative findings.
Correct.
Even in the absence of presumption, we would find an X.
Exactly. With the exception of maybe copying, where maybe, you know, I don't know how that works out, but in every single, certainly with all the important ones, with praise, with commercial success, with skepticism, they make a point of saying, well, we gave Schramm the presumption, you haven't rebutted it, and so game over. So we're going to stop there.
I'm not asking my question clearly enough.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out whether we need to remand or just reverse.
No.
That is... If they had presented the alternative argument and the board said, we don't need to get to whether it directly shows these secondary considerations because we give them a presumption that we find unrebutted. If that's an alternative argument they made to the board and the board didn't address it, then it seems like it has to go back and give them an opportunity to argue the direct evidence supporting secondary considerations even if we agree that the presumption was improperly
applied. Well, the way the record developed was there was no concession from Schramm, of course, at the IPR stage, that if you don't give us the presumption, we have no evidence. They pointed to evidence. They pointed to the articles principally, right? And what we said was when you look at the – and the record's closed, right? So everything that you need is in the record here. What the record shows is that every article they relied on cites for praise the prior art, narrow wide teeth, or the hooked teeth, or the you know something else in
the. But it wasn't principally the articles. They had quite compelling expert testimony.
Their expert testimony. So I want to get to that expert testimony because when their expert when they say their expert attributed the sales and the praise and things like that to the 027 patent. There's no question the sales are to the X-Sync. There's no question the praise is to the X-Sync. But when we get to the details of the 027 patent, their only evidence shows, and let me find it here. So at A1221 is where they make the argument below that they have testimony showing that the 027 patent is responsible for these things. One reference, there are three references there. One reference is at A2222, paragraph 20. And all it says, that's their expert saying, offsets help retain the chain on the chain ring. Well, we already know that from Parachini and Thompson. Offsets do that. The next two sites they provide are only showing that the X-Sync practiced the claims. There's nothing in that. There's no testimony. No expert pointed to the offsets in particular were responsible for the success. When they talk about the success, they talk about, you know, very vaguely the patented invention, but they start switching the patented invention with the X-Sync as a whole, which is improper here for the reasons we discussed, that there are so many patents. I see I'm in my rebuttal time, but I'm happy to...
Okay.
Okay.
Why don't we hear from you?
Thank you.
you, Your Honor. Please the court. Amazing. Nothing short of revolutionary, the biggest evolutionary step forward in a long time, performed flawlessly, mechanical duct tape. Those are words not from our marketing department. These are words from professional riders.
And we're talking about the product here. These are comments with regard to the
comments
product.
About
so just let me ask you, if Fox contends that the product, this X-Sync, includes numerous features not claimed by the claims at issue here, the 027, that seems right to me, having viewed the record. Is there any dispute about that at all?
Well, I think that there are other features. The question is really whether or not other features contribute to the success of the product, and that's
okay.
Where
no. That wasn't my question. I was going to get to that.
Right.
But there's no question that there are other features are not claimed by the claims here.
Some other features are not claimed. That's right, Your Honor.
By this particular patent,
Your Honor.
The next question I have is with respect to those features not claimed. Seems like they also contend, and I just want to get clear that there's no dispute about certain things. I don't think you have a dispute that those features are contained in other patents other than the 027 patent.
They are contained in continuations of the 027 parent. The 027 is the parent. They are contained in
other
continuations.
Other patents. Okay. And don't you think is it your view that there's no significance to the non-claimed features in the, there's no significance of those features in terms of your product? I mean, it's not bells and, right, I just want to confirm.
Right.
We're not talking bells and whistles. We're not talking about a screwdriver in this, you know, sophisticated mechanical product, right?
Right. Well, this is the product. These are the products right here, okay? They are deceptively simple, all right? But they're narrow. They're short, okay? Now, in terms of other features, there are some other features in it. Some of them are, you can see how these things look differently. They have different colors. Some have 5 connections, some have 6 connections, okay. Et cetera. There are those other features. With respect to the patents, and let's get right to it. This is about, when they claim, oh, it's a completely separate patent. It's not. It's a continuation. And I think as Judge Wallace was trying to point out earlier, is that we could have, as we know as a matter of law, if something is a continuation, you could have had all of those claims in the original parent patent. That's the definition of it. It's not something that's totally different. And so the idea that you
get... So you think there's a special rule for continuation patents so that if you have a patent that's at issue here in validity, it's only the 027, that you get to include with respect to commercial success and all of these other factors... everything going on with those other patents?
If you prove that the other parts of the continuation in part patent also contribute to that commercial success, I absolutely do think you do, Your Honor. Now,
why do you get a presumption, though, for this single patent that we're talking about?
Well, I think that's the same rule that was determined in WBIP, Gator Tail, and
I think our case law on this is very confused. Because there are different patents covering this. So, say hypothetically, we had this patent and it had something, and it turns out, well, it may have a little bit of commercial success or things, but one of these continuation patents is really the driver.
Okay.
I mean, the testimony and all the evidence here would generally is related to the success of the product, not the individual patent. So why should you get a presumption here rather than being required to show actual direct evidence tying these features to commercial success?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, I believe that we did show direct evidence, and we also and the
well, that's
the panel.
I wanted to follow up on that. So
right. I mean,
because I didn't get a clear answer from your friend on the other side. Your view, and I know you don't want us to go here, but your view is if we disagree with the presumption being applied, this needs to be remanded for the PTAB to look at the direct evidence and whether that's sufficient to show secondary considerations.
I think there's enough direct evidence that's in the record for you to...
No, I mean, that's a factual finding. We're not going to make that on appeal. But you think that this should be, at worst for you, a vacate and remand?
Oh, absolutely, Your Honor, because, you know, the presumption starts, as all the case law says, the presumption starts if you show something is covered and coextensive.
Why is there even a presumption for this? Secondary considerations are the patentee's burden to prove. They're the ones that should be in control of this type of evidence. They know what their patents are. They know what their commercial products are. They know how they're received. They can go out. Why do you get a presumption? Why shouldn't you just be required to show this evidence?
Well, Your Honor, I think we did show it. You have to start by showing it's
coextensive. Answer my question. Yeah. Why do you think – I know it's out there. We have to follow that case law. But why does this presumption exist in the first place?
I think it's because then you would put the patent owner with this impossible burden to prove a negative, to prove that the only reason something was successful was because of some particular elements of claim. And a presumption is just that, Your Honor.
But that's what it's you not, have to do to get the presumption.
No, well, we did, Your Honor. This panel, these three judges went through 8.5 pages and 11.5 pages talking about the idea of nexus. They didn't just say, you know, look, you had a claim chart and so you get a presumption.
But
they didn't
do that. In this case, we have a peculiar set of facts where you've got another IPR going and you used another patent and commercial success of this product with respect to the other patent. So this is kind of almost a really unusual situation where that seems odd, does it not?
It doesn't, Your Honor, because of the fact that it's these are all part of the same patent, okay?
Okay,
it's
so
not like Theracense, where it is truly a different patent.
So this comes down to your argument with respect to continuations get treated differently and they get all treated as
I think
same
absolutely
patent.
As a matter of law, because everything that's in a continuation you could put in the original patent. And so just calling it a different patent, and then the cases that are dismissed by Fox in their reply is just saying, oh, well, that's part of the same invention. Well, if this is part of a continuation, it is part of that original patent. It could have been done in the original patent. And they didn't come up with evidence because, as I said before, a presumption is just that. It's just a start, okay? They can then come up with evidence that shows, no, the commercial success, the long-felt need, the skepticism, all those other things were shown by something
else.
Yeah,
but the difficulty we might be having is that the burden is on the patent owner with regard to these objective indicia.
Right.
And so the presumption allows you to make a leap. One could argue that the reason that the burden is on the patent owner is also the patent owner has greater access to all of this stuff than would the potential infringer.
Right.
And you're saying, we don't need much. I mean, what if there were two components covered by the patent and six that weren't? Do you get a presumption in that circumstance? Forget this continuation issue.
Well, no. I think you have to show, you have to show that the nexus, it would never attach because
okay,
you have
so
to
you
show that it's coextensive and that
and
it
your
is
argument
covered
of coextensive
by it.
Is based, rests entirely on the continuation piece of
no.
this case.
No, it's not, Your Honor, because you have
but
to
you
show something's coextensive.
But when there are multiple features here, which you admit, and they're governed by multiple patents, then you can't show that this single patent is coextensive with the invention.
Well, I think you can, Your Honor. I think you can. I think you can. Whether something, you can have two different patents that are coextensive with a product.
Well, that just makes no sense to me. Clearly, these other patents are also contributing to this invention. You're arguing that in other cases.
Well, Your Honor, the second one, the 250, which was done by the exact same judges in the PTAB, was a case in which it's actually more narrow than this. And it's not something that's different. It's not, you know, in other words, the different cases
think,
that they
what
looked
upon. What do you
upon,
think coextensive means? You mean coextensive can be even if you're one of two components of a product?
No. Okay. I think coextensive means that the patent itself, the elements of it are covered, not just covered by, but also. I'm sorry?
Isn't it what you're saying that one, in one case, one patent can involve a continuation and it covers everything? But on one of the continuation patents, that subordinate part, which would be part of the original parent patent, could in itself be litigated by itself.
Yeah.
And both could exactly contribute. One as part and one as a little subpart, but both of them are contributing to this.
And you have to do that through evidence. And the evidence we presented was sworn testimony.
Can I just ask you, I know we have a lot of cases, and I agree that we've said a lot of different things. Obviously, when we decide a case, we're deciding it based on the arguments made by the parties. But you know our jurisprudence says you go back to the first case,
right,
if you think there's any kind of perceived colleague. So we look at DeMarco. And DeMarco has quite a discussion on this, but what they say is they discuss it when the thing that is commercially successful is not coextensive with the patented invention. For example, if the patented invention is only a component of a commercially successful machine or process, the patentee must show prima facie a legal sufficient relationship between that which is patented and that which is said.
Right.
So they're saying, you don't get a presumption. That you have to make a showing if it's covered by more, if the product includes more than one component.
Right.
And I assume by that they mean substantial or significant. They're not talking about bells and whistles.
That's right. And we presented, let's look what we did to present to show that it was coextensive. We had three sworn people who testified, an expert who testified about it, an internal person who was skilled in the art who testified about it, and the person who was the vice president of product development that testified about it, as well as presenting over 200 pages of claim charts, et cetera. Now, let's look what they did to say that it wasn't coextensive.
And by coextensive, you mean that we've got the patent. The only patent we have in front of us is the 027.
Right.
So it's got claims. I thought you agreed with me that there are not everything in the product is covered by the claims. There are additional features that aren't covered by the claims.
There are features that are not necessarily related to the idea of retaining the chain on the ring. There are features that may be included in there, like an interlink recess, that are not claimed in this particular patent.
But we're talking about commercial success of the
right,
product.
Right.
Right.
Right. What drives that,
your point is that, according to all the people who express surprise and amazement and so on, is retaining the chain on the ring when you're riding over rough ground.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Yeah, I'm only speaking for myself, obviously. If what we're thinking about or talking about, which is just saying the presumption wouldn't apply in this circumstance, you still, if you can establish the nexus, then you will prevail on
right,
the secondary features.
Right.
So no one is talking here about having the ability with evidence that absolutely points strongly in that direction to establish that there's a nexus, right?
Yeah, and we presented that, Your Honor, and they're
yeah, but that's not what the board based its findings on. The board's based its findings on a presumption and that they failed to rebut that presumption. They didn't make the alternative finding that you showed by direct evidence a nexus.
Well, I think they list what is direct evidence, Your Honor. I agree with you. They don't come to a conclusion that says that we presented through direct evidence.
Well, right. If we find they legally erred in the way they applied the presumption, then they have to make that finding on direct evidence.
Right. But, Your Honor, then you're saying not just two different patents. You're actually saying you have to do that for each individual claim. Because this, what they keep calling a second patent, could have been the same claim
but
in the same 027
that
patent.
That was your choice to put it in separate patents rather than put it in the same patent.
Right, but it doesn't make a legally distinct patent.
I mean, I don't understand what you're talking about with continuations unless you're arguing to us that we should further modify our already overcomplicated presumption thing and add a special rule for continuation patents.
Well, I know all the cases that have looked at a question of nexus and a presumption of nexus with a parent and a continuation in part and a divisional have all found that you can have a nexus in both of those. All you have to do is show that it's covered by it and it's coextensive with it. It's not changing any case law. None whatsoever.
But we're not talking about nexus here. We all agree that the test is nexus.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, I think the question presented by this case is the presumption. But let me move you on to another thing, which is, I mean, the board's opinion is very long and it says a lot of things. But one of the additional arguments your friend makes is that on the rebuttal, even if we were to agree with you, a presumption applies.
Yes.
On the rebuttal, the board, I mean, you understand, you know the phrases he's talking about, that there were some phrases that suggested that the burden he has on rebuttal is to show it was solely. Do you agree with that test, or is your view the board didn't really mean it?
I don't think that's what they said. It's not what they said. What DeMarco says and what Polaris says that what you have to do is come up with evidence to rebut something.
I'm just inquiring. I know what the cases say. I'm just inquiring what the board said and did in this case.
I don't believe the board said that.
What standard do you think the board applied in terms of determining whether or not the other side had satisfied its?
The board looked at their evidence, their expert, who they said was not. They did not credit him. This is the guy who spent. He looked at 3,700 pages in 35 hours, 19 seconds a page. He admitted that the lawyers wrote the majority of his opinion. He admitted that there was a long-felt need. Their only other person who testified was not someone skilled in the art, Your Honor. It was someone who was hired after they had already made these
rings. And the board made all of these findings?
Yeah.
Use some phrases that seem a little dubious, right? You know the ones you're talking about. Blue highlighted them in their brief. But you don't think they really... Your view is that the standard is that on rebuttal, even assuming there is a presumption, on rebuttal, it's their burden to show it was solely.
Well, I don't believe it is their burden to show that it's solely. Okay. I think that they have to show that there is something there. They didn't come up with any rebuttal evidence, Your Honor. They didn't. And the evidence that they did, the board rejected it and did not give it credit. And that's the whole key, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I just have a couple of little housekeeping questions. The first is what I asked your opposing counsel. On 43 of the red brief,
right. He
said he falsely suggested.
Right.
He said he responded to that in the gray brief. And indeed, what you said was in the blue brief.
Right.
So what's your take on that now?
Well, what was just said was not accurate. He said that it wasn't even the 027 wasn't mentioned in the first few licenses. The 027 patent wasn't issued, Your Honor. The first licenses were for a European patent. And it was considered called Kettering, which is chain ring in German. But it included all of that, family. And as you generally give a license, you just don't give it for one particular patent. You give it for a family, Your Honor. But the unrebutted testimony was that it was all those licenses were covered by the 027. I don't think there's any dispute about that, Your Honor. And that's why we said that was kind of falsely suggesting that.
On page 45, at footnote 13, you say the pictures that Fox Factory put into their brief are misleading, undated comparisons.
Right.
What record evidence shows that those are outdated?
There's nothing in the record that shows the dates of any of those pictures. The board looked at those pictures and they said, I believe they recognized that they were undated. They also recognized that they were fuzzy. You couldn't tell from them.
They were fuzzy, yeah.
And it was just a question of, you were looking at something, say, well, I don't know if I copied this or not. Well, if you, and it was admitted that one, we had evidence showing that the one ring that they were showing was from 2016. They copied this in 2013, so they weren't using it that. And so that was the point, Your Honor.
I see.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Just a couple points, Your Honor.
But you need to respond very briefly, if you can, to this continuation argument.
Yeah, well, so the continuation argument just disregards that when you're looking at secondary considerations, you do it on a claim-by-claim basis. It's not on a patent-by-patent basis, and it's certainly not on a family-by-family basis. It's got to be on the claimed invention. All the case law talks about that. He mentioned WBIP and Gator Tail in both of those cases, and I can find the quotes for you, but they're quoted in our gray brief. In both cases, the court in the WBIP, a single claim was representative of the claims in both patents. In Gator Tail, the court went out of its way to say, for the purposes of this appeal, the two patents claim essentially the same invention, and that's true for all the cases that they cite. I want to talk briefly about the licensing. And the reason they don't mention the 027 patent is that it hadn't issued. Well, how important could the 027 patent be if the patent hadn't even issued at that point? They're licensing the German Kettering patent, and that's in the appendix. You'll see the claims in that case don't claim an offset. They're different claims than were claimed in the 027 patent. So we have to stay focused on the claim, and that's what the board failed to do. That's what SRAM fails to do. Your Honor, I can give you the cites for when the board said Fox had to attribute all the benefits of the extinct chainring to unclaimed features. That's at A38, and they did it again at A104. And then they went on to say that, that our evidence was no good because it failed to show that the praise was only directed to the features found in the prior art. And again, the same two points, 38 and 104, 105. And then finally, with regard to the issue of, we asked for reversal, and the reason we asked for reversal is the record's closed. There is no evidence in the record that shows anything supporting the 027, the claimed offsets. Not a single piece of evidence attributing success to the offsets. It's all to the claim narrow wide, which we already know contribute to chain retention from JP Shimano and Martin, or the mud clearing recesses, which are separately patented.
Well, that's not my recollection of the record.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
There's nothing about the offsets.
There's no mention of the offsets in any of the record materials in there. And I mean, we just don't have time to go through them all, but they are discussed in the brief. If there are any more questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We thank both sides in the case submitted.